that it happened later in the sequence of questions rather than earlier.
Not fair. But you just trying to make it
earlier. Sure.
You made sure on the first one.
Yeah.
Well, I thought his 5,000 flying wounds death
more
significant. Okay. Ask a question or whatever to have yes. more.
Well, also,
so I don't see why it might not be as salient. But I don't understand.
I think that there's a combination of things. One is that it's going to be harder to, that kind of an effect will just be harder to detect because it's an additional level. And you're looking at a multivariate thing instead of a single summary. And the other thing is
I would like that just a piece of information that was briefly one of them, I think, in Columbia. Getting back to David's book, if you're actually using the channel, like expressions, not only like the bias or scoring, perhaps not. You may actually be biased in the physiological response to anything. Again, this is anecdotal. Every examiner they ask at 9-5, if you wanted somebody to fail this test, you could have to do that. So, you know, with all that bias working, even apart from misreading the chart.
Have a level of subtlety here that would go
object, the question here, or is it, we're asking this question, deliberately biased. If it's a, now I suppose you were to, we do know that people generally like, or attract people, don't like high attraction. You could run studies to see whether everything else being equal, unattractive people more often their charge of living as you want. I'm not convinced that's going to work. It's probably worth a try.
Well, I mean, there's the obvious issue of ethnicity. Gender.
Right. On Kathy's last point, one of the issues of the procedural perspective, if the follow-up is question specific, but the benefit of the test is test specific, not question specific, it might be a disconnect between what value is and what happens in the previous process thereafter. And that also highlights it.
Has there been a study in which the answer, in which there, all the questioning has been done in an automated fashion, is by a computer rather than by a person?
Find out what is the confession rate of those who are solid.
kind of argument against the response and critical evidence we have with is valid or not valid. The third, I noticed just within the same study on page 2 versus page 57, inconsistencies in both numbers. So at one point there were 53 and all had confessed on page 57. On page 2 it was 53, but 4 had not confessed. So, you know, you worry a little bit when you see inconsistencies back in the numbers as well. My point is, I saw that defense, I understand that defense, I'm not convinced because the appropriate experimental conditions really aren't there to make sense of, to interpret those numbers.
If we don't know the base rate of confessions upon interrogation being told that your polygraph was that you failed the polygraph, the defendant knew whether you failed it, then we don't know anything.
Right, and what's measured as confession, right. Now, that's in this document, so I thought to bring that up, but it's interesting that that's considered as evidence, but it's one cell of a four cell design.
At the bottom, these are our studies. These are the Reed studies on the studies on the PDS. The third one is the only one that doesn't. They merely say all we have is a total of two inconclusive, but they didn't say kind of where they were. So I wasn't able to. These numbers probably aren't bad compared to what you would get if you put those in the right place. And then for comparison, I went to Erland's meta-analysis paper on polygraph exams. Now, this paper came out in 94, unfortunately was not published, so, but it would, okay, this is an 81 study. These are in the mid-90s, so we cover the time point. But Erland, Erland's meta-analysis did not cover screening stuff. But there are comparable, you know, there are figures that I felt might be useful. They did cover so-called lab analogs, like different, you know, actual incident crimes. So you might want to look at what she found as an overall figure for the percent correct when you include inconclusives as errors. So that would be comparable. So for lab analog studies, now not of espionage, but of other sorts of things, 83%, 71%. Okay, and then she had another breakdown of controlled question tests, which are, again, similar to these. So we have 71% and 74%. So I would argue that these are presumably better than chance, but far from stellar. And there's a huge amount of variability in these columns, but in some average sense, maybe these aren't terribly bad summaries. So at least we're all in the same ballpark, which gives some kind of extra validity to these numbers. John raised a number of points. We'll have a number of, I'm losing my voice, so I'll just be quick about things like this. One comment that have. First thing you'll note about these, well, the statistician would notice, you aren't probably leaving this in here, but we have no indication of the level of uncertainty. We have no standard errors, we have no confidence levels. And that is runs throughout the literature. So we give point estimates, they may be detected, but you guys, they do not give confidence. Now, one, we're going to give a confidence interval here. There's one thing you've got to take into account, which starts out sounding like it's a minor technical point, but it's an incredibly very major important point, and that is studies tend to be conducted or analyzed or thought of on the assumption that the basic unit of analysis is individual polygraph examinee. Okay? But I would argue, perhaps going too far for emphasis, that might much better be looked at if the individual unit of analysis is the polygraph examiner. And so when you have a study with, well, for example, this one, we have 56 people being polygraphed with three examiners. Is our effective N 56 or is it 3?
and I am led to the very first, my first experience in Dr. Feinberg's office. The head of the consulting lab, the applied stat, guy walks in with a study, and he's very interested in this threat of a certain chemical to the spinal column, which he had dogs, and he has tons of analysis, 500 data points. Very exciting. Well, in the discussion, I discovered that these 500 data points were based on four dogs, and he had a lot of data on each dog. And I think the same thing kind of holds here. You've got to think about how many examiners is this based on, not only on how many examinees. And the problem then comes, among other, Kathy's alluded to some errors, but the problem in analyzing this or giving inferential statistics and so on is that if you have three examiners or you have 50, and you think you've got 50 data points, but you only have three, of course, your test of this is going to be rather different. And as an example here, this is the first of the Sheila Reed studies, and this is data comparing the initial version of the TDS to the counterintelligence scope polygraph exam using the directed Y question, so they're quite similar. Now you will note that here, of those guilty, we have 83% were detected by this method, and here, 55%. Now, of course, that difference is highly statistically significant, right? But the only problem is that this study involves a total of 12 examiners. I don't have the third row here, which was the CSP for the probable Y. Okay, so each of these rows is based on four examiners. So we aren't comparing, say, several hundred subjects here with here, but we're comparing four examiners here with the four examiners here. So you have two issues there. Your N is smaller, but you also might want to worry about the nature of these examiners. Are the ones that got, they weren't randomized, okay, that's good, that's appropriate, that's one. But are the ones that got this 83%, are they the more experienced? The data was there, but it wasn't looked at. So if you have a concern about the role of the examiner, and another way of being concerned about the examiner, I think, is, you worry about the analog studies, simulated analog studies like these, and you say, well, look, in an actual situation, the stakes are going to be very high for the examinee, but here they aren't. But how about the examiner? I think the stakes are pretty high for the examiner here, right? I mean, he or she, that's, I don't know how it's spelled out to these folks, but they certainly don't want to go in there and mess up and get a whole bunch of people that were programmed in that they were guilty or vice versa. Okay, so they are going to be very highly motivated, I would argue, to figure out whether or not this individual in front of them is programmed as something or programmed innocent. And what then one worries about is the studies are all very clear on the importance of having the examiners blinded to this aspect. But what they leave out is, what are the details of the procedures that were used to ensure that, and what evidence do we have that that was in fact the case? Because you can immediately see now why an examiner might want to skew, for whatever reason, he or she has knowledge this person was in fact out there destroying that kid. And so therefore it's pretty important to them that this person come out looking guilty on the exam. And on that note, as a biostatistician, I am aware how hard to carry out studies on people. They always have mercy. But it is a bit disconcerting to discover implementation errors in the studies that couldn't have found out about reading studies. But for example, if you have available,
in the implementation area that is not really relevant at this point, but in the implementation area, making a word. If you go to page 21 and tab 6, and you have that available, this is part of the session of one of Sheila Reed's studies. And she is comparing her work to some of the earlier work. And she's comparing it to this study, which was one of the Barlin studies, where they compared a multiple issue framework to a single issue framework. And she indicates that in physical examination, physical communication from Barlin, highly likely it was carried out the way it was said it was. So the random sample, the single issue examination, and the issue during that study indicated the time between the examination being 1 minute and 8 seconds longer than the time between the tests by chart within the examination. 1 minute and 8 seconds is not sufficient time to pre-test 2 relevant and 3 control questions. So it's possible some of the examiners, contrary to instructions, were pre-testing all of the relevant questions, in which case, if that's true, then the fact that there's no difference here between a multiple issue and a single issue set can simply be due to the way the test was set up. And, it's a technical battle if you haven't read these things, but my point is not that issue, but my concern that it's easy to say like this, key that everybody be appropriately blind. And so, if that breaks down, you've got a problem. And now here we have a report where something else broke down. So I get very nervous. And this is, and also to go to the last Reed study, there is some frank discussion, which doesn't come in the other studies, about other problems. So if we go to, about page 16, they're concerned about the contamination of the subject population. And they indicated that there are nothing subjects to a local employment agency.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, sympathetic, just kind of problems. These information. Page 16 and 17, very end. Okay, they're getting these subjects to an employment agency. Employment agencies probably use them, but they probably aren't, research groups. They aren't used to following protocols. So there's evidence that they didn't follow through. That may have contaminated the population. In particular, on page 17, paragraph in the middle on page 17 of tab 8, other problems in the employment agency include information that the agency provides to the examinees. The period of time they're providing for all the examinees, information which none of the examiners are supposed to be exposed. And this is affect the innocent examiners with greater chance of being affected guilty to them. So we do get some indication that some of the difficulties in carrying out the test are being, honestly admitted. There may well be other situations where they aren't. This is a continual concern. And I will step down because I'm losing my voice. I have a few other comments, but I'm going to cover. And if John, if they don't get brought up and they still seem salient, I will bring them up later.
I want to talk a little bit about the constant barter. One of the things about this table, though, is that we're dealing primarily with naive subjects. But these are relatively naive subjects. Average cell size was about 150, several more over 200. Two had 100, and I think one or two had under 100. Maybe 80. But they were about 150. Substantial cell size. The last article by Hans and Barger talked about the relative utility of semiconductors for senior systems. The reason that was appropriate is because what we haven't told you is the earlier study suggested the single best channel, you have to look at a channel, was given electrodermal activity, SWIFT. Now, there clearly are individual differences, but in this particular paper, they tried to examine which of the two would be better. Their criterion measure was how many corrections, base level, sintering, you have to perform the two techniques. They found the chain conductance to be better. That's not a very sound basis for making a decision. So I thought I would just spend 5 minutes at max on what this response really is and why one or the other is better, and kind of the significance of that. Electrodermal activity is measuring echoing gland activity that's found is These are glands that look like this. They don't have hair follicles in them. They basically are organized like variable resistors in parallel, which is a circuit I have mapped down here. The reason I say variable resistors in parallel is this is antinergically innervating, so sympathetic nervous system. Most of the postganglionic sympathetic effector systems are driven by norepinephrine. This is driven by acetylcholine. That makes it pharmacologically a little different than the other systems. But the parasympathetic activation has very little impact on this. It's primarily sympathetic. As you start to show activation of this, there's a secretion. It moves up into the gland, and so you reduce the resistance to a current flow. There's two different types of measurements. You can do endosomatic and exosomatic. Endosomatic we used to do 30 to 35 years ago. You would basically scrape all the skin off the system and then measure the electrical activity, the impulse that's going to the eccrine gland. It's painful and it turned out not to be as sensitive. And just putting a circuit that very first developed in the late 1800s, you impute a voltage and you measure the voltage drop across two sensors. From that known flaw, you can look at the resistance, so the skin resistance between those two. The more you sweat, not the problem. You need resistance goes down. The readout from these charts is in terms of resistance if you're using a constant current circuit, and its conductance if you use a constant voltage. That's just a technical observation. The place in which one typically records these are just designated by those three sites. The one used by DOE is site 2. Site 3 was what was originally used commonly. Site 1 is actually now suggested by the Society for Psychophysiological Research because you have fewer abrasions, cuts, and calluses at this glance than at the tip of the fingers. There's also preparation that's recommended that tends not to be followed. These are seen, you saw these when you looked at your own charts. They're just examples of skin conductance or skin resistance responses. And basically, there's a measurement. You look to what extent is the response bigger for one question than the other, to a relevant question than a control question. Now, baselines may vary, even within the fairly short time period in which it's measured. And so you can ask, since there's a reciprocal association between skin conductance and skin resistance, you can ask which one is better. So Hansenberger argued that it was skin conductance because of the number of centuries. So that's not important anymore that whole process is computerized. We have different A to D converters that allow us to measure the whole range. So I've created this illustration. If we understand the biology right, and these eccrine glands actually act like variable resistors in parallel, then we would expect skin conductance to be better because it's simply the sum of each of those conductors. Okay, so it's a simple sum. If skin resistance, and that's what you see here. I've got two different hypothetical circumstances. You have 1,000 megaohm resistance for empty sweat glands and 10 megaohms for full sweat glands. And in condition one, we have 200 empty sweat glands. Okay, you have some stimulus, and you fill 10 sweat glands. All right? The only difference down here, I think they actually have put 100. This is a typo. All right? Down here I have 100 full, 100 empty, 100 full, 100 empty, and then it fills 10. So we know, because this is hypothetical, that the effect is the same. The stimulus in both cases activates 10 glands. And so if you just work through the math, you can see I have 200 times 0.001 microsiemens, 0.2 microsiemens. That's my pre-stimulus, my post-stimulus, 190 plus 10 times different response conductances obtained here. And we get a change in conductance of 0.99 microsiemens. If we go down to this different base level, now here's a person who's more aroused, if you will, at base level, for average perception, conductance 10.1, 11.09, the change is 0.99, linear, exactly as you would expect from the biology of that eccrine system. The interesting thing is what you get for skin resistance. Same example. The total resistance will be the sum of the reciprocal of the resistances. So if you work this pre-stimulus circumstance out, you are sitting at a 5 megaohm resistance level. Post-stimulus, you're sitting at 840 kiloohms. And so you see a response of 4,160 kilo-ohms. A different base level, much more aroused. You have an initial resistance of 99 kilo-ohms, obviously, because many more are active. The pulse stimulus of 90.2, so your response is 8.8 kilo-ohms. This is not at all, these are dramatically different responses. These are the same, which is, that's the major reason why skin conduction further than skin resistance is actually preferred, and it's something that, you know, when trying to evaluate this literature, we might, when you might see some
studies that were carried out, which was
skin resistance is tended to be a fast word.
Skin conductance,
I think they're not using skin conductance, and you may be able to tell us the strategy, but that's the important story about the two, not how many extensions are required. Which is,
I think the question now goes to the vendors, because we asked the vendors.
I was just going to say, there are three vendors.
Three major vendors, and unfortunately, the absolute answer is Jordan from the Megan University.
What are the units, the output units on this scale? As our DOE and Albert said, there were no units that I could see. So, you know?
No.
Mental arithmetic, very tough mental arithmetic, you might show up more. But that's an empirical.
fairness, if they have the wrong, they're making the same resistance. The questions are sufficiently close together.
Yeah.
That it's not going to be a huge problem question to question unless you see a big change in base level in that period. Where it's more of a concern is on a recharging of the same individual. Because you can imagine where their base level might change substantially.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, my biggest concern from this part of the presentation I have is not within a chart, but across charts. There's a base level that really gives you erroneous instances. Because they're not doing the reciprocal. They're just looking at the size of the response to the question.
Yeah.
That size doesn't mean the same thing.
Yeah. But when we get a I think that we could draft the letter that we gave to each of them. It would be pretty simple.
Not a tough question. Just thank you. The thing you're asking is whether we're using constant currents or constant voltage. In micro Siemens that's what you want to know.
By the way, I suspect that there are going to be other instrumentation related questions other than this one, and it would be useful to get whatever documentation they can provide. I think there must be something somewhere. The question is, do those data exist?
Yeah.
Back in Dunkirk.
Yeah. All that additional examples?
Yeah, basically what you'd want would be, it wouldn't have to be a particular person, it could be an ID, you know, you have examiners A, B, C, and D, and, you know, what's the performance of it. If you had that information, you could do a proper statistical analysis.
I could argue that either way. I could certainly argue that that's the most important question.
sometimes it strikes me is the consistency of the rates and how they differ from 50% to say suggests that something is happening no matter what you thought that variability. What is happening, you don't know, at least with care, but that fact that you regularly get numbers that are different does suggest that no matter how we're going to assess the variability, it can't be as extreme as there being only three observations, four observations, 12 observations, because you'd expect those numbers to vary more. And in fact, what if you think of examiners as clusters or another component of a variation, which is another way to say the same thing, the question is what's the size of those components and which ones dominate, and very clearly the extremal position is that it's the examiner's variation that dominates, and so you really are at the extreme that Tad was mentioning. And the other extreme is the one that says that doesn't matter at all, and it's all subject, and we expect it to be somewhere in between, but we don't have any notion where right now, although we don't expect it to be close to the extreme of the examiner only.
Now, another issue I think you might want to think about, and maybe we don't care. I mean, let's say you have, I don't want to use accuracy because people like it, but I want a single statistic. Let's suppose you have 75% performance. Okay, do we care if each examiner has 75% performance or, there's three good examiners and one terrible examiner? Does that matter to us? I mean, from the point of view of a screening exam, someone gets in, the dice is rolled, they get an examiner, maybe it doesn't even matter. Well, from the point of view of quality improvement, it matters because the place you'd like to find out who that bad examiner was and retrain.
Or if you have a few little cracks again and there's really one to do a follow-up of people can't.
Right, so certainly persistent design, that would be. I mean, that's the other thing you get out of this ABCD is you get some measure of how good things.
There's also suggests, it's been said on several occasions that outcome feedback is a good thing, and there are a number of studies that demonstrate that outcome feedback is a good thing in any kind of clinical or subjective assessment test. Well, we have studies, and we have ground-truth outcomes on these studies, and it suggests that if we do something like these studies, either just the charts that were done in the studies, or many studies that are sort of an ongoing kind of thing, where people are actually doing live tests on people who have been said, told a lie or not told a lie, but they don't know which. And sort of train a polygraph examiner, so would that improve their training? Make them more accurate?
I think one of our searches for that answer is we have submitted funding of the system calls to our cost box, which would be, right now it's all kind of paperwork. The function means that if you look at what we're trying to examine now, the closest we can get to this feedback is the way we're trying to get a
not, are we missing empirical evidence? I'm trying to make sure we covered this. Is this this or are there studies that are
only if you don't have is one of the completely produced.
And that will get asked as soon as I can from
the biggest question in terms of creating this last study is, can we say anything about this actually? We slap on the question. We're back to this is the latest answer. The results are the best we can get in the field, so that we see maximum accuracy. And we go for a pure random selection across the whole field of all our families. Obviously, it's a lot of people. So, economic plays a huge role. We will have a lot of time on it. So all those things have to be considered in terms of where we are right now is we have attempt to control everything that we could control for. So we look very differently at, rather than did our examiners pick up on the right question, did they pick up on the right subtask, did they pick up on this? We try to look at more of if we could put this into a very simple thing. We programmed a group of people into program the group of people guilty. What is the end of the day? The day is defined as one charge series, charge counterbalance,